Good afternoon. This is Law and Gospel. I'm Roland Lettner. I'm in for Tom Baker yet again today. As we continue on with the program in his absence, Tom should be back tomorrow, as I understand it. It will be nice if you could keep him in your prayers as he travels home to St. Louis so that his journey is a safe one. Today, as we bring the program to you, I was considering what to do as Tom had talked to me last week about the schedule of guests and what types of programs I'd like to bring in his absence. One of the things that I recalled was reading an article that was in The Witness, and it was called Reclaiming the Church as Young in a Culture of Change. And as the father of a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old, and looking at the world that they're growing up in, it was an article that caught my attention. And that article was written by Dr. John Oberdeck. And John Oberdeck is an assistant director of lay ministry and a professor at Concordia, Wisconsin. I believe that's in Mequon. Is that right, Dr. Oberdeck?
Yes, it is.
Well, it's nice to hear your voice again. We haven't spoken for a while. And I'm glad that you're going to be on today because this article fascinated me. And in your experience in family ministry, you're uniquely qualified to comment further because I know you're contained to a certain amount of space in these articles when you do them for The Witness. So as I want to get right into this, I never really perceived the church as having abandoned its youth. You know, I know that we confirm our kids at about age 15, and if statistics hold true, about 2/3 of them disappear within 5 years of that from the church. But I didn't realize that was a type of abandonment. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that what we're dealing with here is primarily perceptions among a large segment of the teen population. And sometimes perceptions for them become the reality. Certainly, I'm not suggesting by any means that that the church has intentionally abandoned youth. But what does come out of some of the research that's available today is that many times teens are perceiving themselves as being abandoned by society in general, and that's going to be reflected in a number of different areas, whether we're talking about the school system, mm-hmm. Sporting events, their own families, and because the church is a significant part of their experience, those that are in the church, and of society in general, the church winds up lumped in with it as well, and things that the church does sometimes with every intention of actually serving the young person may be understood or perceived by the young person as abandonment.
Well, know that my temptation sometimes is to say, well, I'd rather not deal with a certain subject. I'll let the pastor, I'll let the church handle that for me. Is that where this abandonment begins?
Well,
am I doing something wrong that I shouldn't be doing?
No. However, it's important to realize that there's no adequate replacement, for the influence that parents have. It's just so significant for parents because they're the frontline interpreters of the world to their children when they're small and major interpreters of the world to their teens as well. That's not a role that you can really shift. You know, the best way to make use of the staff of the church is to ask them, what can I do in communicating with my teen? Not would you please communicate with my teen because I can't do it. That's how we'd want to make use of the professionals who are available.
As I watch some of my peers, you know, the other parents that have kids about the same age, you know, I'm noticing that there's a lot of things going on today. There's soccer practice. There's, other extracurricular activities. Parents are into their own thing. Both parents are working nowadays. It seems like it might be just a little bit too convenient to pass that off because there's so much else going on.
Busyness is rampant everywhere. Everybody's schedule is packed. And what that can do for the teen is they may find themselves falling further and further down on the priority list, even within their own household. Now, it might help if I could give some of the background of where research from this article came from. The article primarily was reviewing a book by Chap Clark. He teaches youth ministry at Fuller in Pasadena, and he also is the editor of Youth Worker Journal. He he decided during a sabbatical to spend the year at a high school, a public high school, teaching, and during that time try to get as good a grip as possible on what life experience is like today for teens. And it took about 6 months of strong persistence on his part before he was able to get into their world, before they would let him see some of the things that they were feeling and what their world was like. And that's where he began to listen very closely to what they felt about such things as sports and how their families were relating to them. And that's where this sense of abandonment seemed to come from that he records. At one place, he records this statement by a high school student. The student told him, "Tell them our story. Tell them the truth, that nobody cares, that nobody listens, that teachers and coaches and cops and parents don't even know who we are. Tell them that and see if anybody listens. Ha! Not a chance." Well, that statement could be interpreted a number of different ways. That's the life experience of that particular teen, but it certainly indicates a lack of, trust that anybody's really listening to them.
So do they make statements like that for shock value, to test to see if anyone is listening?
It could be, yeah. And we also know that the teen years are by their very nature a time of life that is that's filled with a lot of angst, a lot of exploring, a lot of frustration, and it's all mixed together. But let me just share another example, and this isn't one that Chap came up with in the book, but something that just struck me, that sometimes this abandonment even winds up displaying itself in such subtle things as architecture. One of the more popular floor plans for houses right now is called a split. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
Where you've got a master bedroom and bath on one side of the house, and then you've got the bedrooms off on the other side of the house, and you've got your living room, dining room in between, and then there's a separate set of bathrooms over there for the other bedrooms. Now, who's over in the other bedrooms? It's the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's, even within homes, this distance between the parents and their children. Now, granted, there's some advantage to the kind of privacy this would give to the parents. But on the other hand, they could go a long period of time without seeing each other, saying hi to each other, just because they're in different parts of the house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You start this article out in a clever way. You say, "Never say to a teenager, 'When I was your age.'" And, you know, my generation, I was 15 years old in 1976. So I heard that plenty of times, especially from, you know, good immigrant parents. I think the immigrant parents tend to say that more than the domestic type of parents. But I'm guilty of saying that a couple of times myself. But the article talks about how kids today are different than, say, when I was 15 years old in 1976, and not in the typical way of being different. You know, where there's a little bit of different technology, there really is a very significant difference in how these kids see the world and see their place in it. I mean, I had my time of angst, and, you know, the girl didn't say yes when I asked her to the prom, and I felt abandoned and that sort of thing. But we're going much beyond that, aren't we?
Yeah, and when it's "I was never your age" as something that you can't say, it's simply because the environment in which they are living is so different. As you mentioned earlier, people are much more busy.
Mm-hmm.
For example, let's look at another way in which the teen world is succeeding in creating its own culture. Text messaging. Roland, can you text message?
Absolutely.
You do?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good.
I have to keep up with my kids somehow.
Well, you know, this is one new phenomenon that creates a way of communication for teens that becomes their own, which is a major theme that Clark points out in this book, and that is that once you have a significant number of the young population feeling themselves pretty much abandoned by the older generation, who normally in previous generations would be present to assist them in the transition from childhood into adulthood, that leaves them to do it pretty much on their own. And this phenomenon he calls the world beneath. Imagine for a moment that you've got a big ditch, and down in the ditch there are the teens, and that is where they feel safe. That's where they're by themselves. And what's happened in what he would say the last 5 to 10 years is that there has been a cover pulled over the top of that, and that's where the teen world is today, with their own set of mores, their own set of communication skills and systems, and they tend to, in that circumstance, raise themselves. Now, I'm not sure that I've shared enough to illustrate what's actually meant by this abandonment, because you know, when I first heard this stuff and read it, my own inclination was, well, wait a second, that's not the behavior that I see mm-hmm. among the college students that we've got here that I work with at Concordia. They don't seem to be overly depressed. They look like they're a very upbeat group of students. In fact, they're just they're a phenomenal group of students. They like to be organized. They get things done. I appreciate being with them. And yet, it could be that they aren't representative of youth in general, or it could be that they are very good, what we call them, double agents who are able to work well in both worlds. Now, take the family, for example. I was talking earlier about architecture as an example.
Yes.
Well, the architecture of the family itself has changed so much in the last 30 years. There was a period of time when only 2% of the marriages in the country would end in divorce, and the last statistic I saw on that was 43% of marriages ending in divorce. Now, think for a moment what that communicates to the young person, to the teen in the household, when the family splits apart. What's communicated oftentimes is that the family is for the adults, and when the adult needs aren't being met, then it's okay for the family to dissolve, regardless of what the needs of the children might be. Now, I realize that that's kind of a politically incorrect way of viewing things right now, but again, I'm not dealing with being politically correct or incorrect. It is just, how does the teen perceive what's happening? You know, dad's taking care of himself. He's going off to do what he wants to do, and here we are. Or mom's going off in her direction, and here we are. So who was the family for? It was for the adults. It wasn't for us, the kids.
Yeah, I've heard this term kicked around that kids are looked at today as life accessories for people. Are you familiar with that term?
No, I am not.
Yeah, it's, you know, the clock is ticking, and you've got another term that's been kicked around, are dinks, dual income, no kids. I think that's a term in political demographics, you know, when they look at who's voting for who. And the thing is, the clock starts ticking, the biological clock is running, and you've got the career, and dad's got the career, and now we have to have kids. It's the natural progress of where our relationship goes. And, you know, a lot of times, people may be 30 years old, and I've encountered folks like this, but really inside, they never got past 15. They're very mature when it comes to their career, but when it comes to making personal choices or being prepared to have a baby and raise that child, they're still adolescents in a sense.
Well, it takes a high degree of selflessness
to
serve as a parent, because it takes time, it takes effort, it takes emotional energy. That's all part of it. But, Roland, you and I were never teenagers in 2007.
I'm trying to be. Well, you know, I want to relate to my
teenager in 1966. You know, that's when I was 14 years old, 1960s. What was the world like in 1966? It was a different place.
Sure.
And so it actually takes some effort on the part of adults to, at least of my generation, to try and look at what the teen world appears to be.
You know, as we're discussing this, I'd like to give out the phone numbers, because we are live in the studio, and if a caller would like to call in, either here in the St. Louis area at 505-7850, or if you're listening to KFUO on the web on Worldwide KFUO, we're at 1-800-730-2727. We'll take some calls if you have questions for Dr. Oberdeck about, if you're a parent, if you have teens, if you have questions about this communication that takes place where maybe they're saying one thing and you're hearing something else because the fine-tuning of the radio dial is a little bit off. We'd like you to come in and join us again locally, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You know, as you were talking, Dr. Oberdeck, the thing that was kind of kicking around in the back of my head, and I've just been a little bit more in tune to this because, my wife and I had our kids a little bit later in life. We were married 10 years before we had them, so I think I'm a little bit older than the average parent of a 10-year-old. Maybe not. I don't have anything to back that up. I'm just guessing that. But as I've been watching the world and as a couple, you talk about having children, starting a family, what's the world going to be like? It seems that for a long time now, from a variety of sources, people have been telling us, create your own reality. You know, life is what you make it. You believe what you want to believe. You know, truth is as malleable, you know, it's moldable like a piece of clay. So aren't these kids just doing naturally what they've been told to do for 10, 15 years?
Well,
they've grown up with that their whole lives.
If, in fact, they are perceiving themselves to not being cared for by the older generation, what they have done is begun to care for each other.
Mm-hmm.
One of the phenomena that Clark observed was that at the late junior high, early high school level, students were forming clusters. That is, they would kind of naturally get together in groups of anywhere from 4 to 8, 4 to 9, and they would wind up not in any formal way, but they would be committing themselves to each other as a group to help one another survive getting through high school. So what was happening was this: since there wasn't the direction coming from above, they were providing the direction for themselves. Now that might work in some situations fairly well, but in terms of growing up and learning what the adult world is like, if there's no adult who's going to let them in and show them what the adult world is like, they're kind of at a loss, and that's where they would wind up pretty much making it up as they would go along.
Is this something that's unique to the American culture? Did the study address that?
I think Western culture would find this to be fairly common experience, which would go beyond just American culture. There, we're talking about Western culture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you'd find this in Middle Eastern culture, for example. That'd be quite different.
Yeah, unfortunately, they have their own issues that are significantly different from this.
Yeah.
In the Islamic cultures today, in Middle Eastern cultures. And they have a different way, I guess, of coping with their abandonment. So it would be interesting to put the two side by side and look at them. But, you know, is this really sort of the result? It's a big phrase, and you're always told to watch the big phrases, so we'll have to maybe define it for them. But is this a postmodern culture that we're coping with? This is what we've built for ourselves because this is where we've taken ourselves. And you follow where I'm going with that? It's
Yeah, uh-huh. And I've done a lot of reading in that whole area of postmodernism and what we're going to do is create our own reality and
right.
So forth. If this is a reflection of postmodernism, it's a reflection of what happens when adults buy into this postmodern, creating their own environment and so forth. And as a concomitant result, the younger generation winds up on their own. I don't see the younger generation thinking in terms of what's postmodern or what's modern. They're just not thinking in those terms.
Mm-hmm.
What they do sense is that sometimes they wind up feeling used. Sports is so much a part of the life of an adolescent, for example. But one of the adolescents, and I think I mentioned this one in the article, that was describing his situation to Clark, he's a 4.0 student, great athlete. His response to Clark was, everybody wants a part of me. You know, he wasn't able to look at this as wonderful opportunities for him. What he was seeing was people wanted to make use of him for their own goals.
Yeah, you talk about, a little bit later in the article, adults living vicariously through their kids, especially when it comes to sports.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can understand where maybe that would come from in terms of feeling that everybody wants a piece of them. They have expectations that have to be met, and that only compounds it, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here comes the big question. We've got about 4 minutes or so before we go to the first break at the bottom of the hour. So how does a church deal with a group of people, adolescents, who create their own language, create their own reality? How do you start the conversation with them? The phrase you put in the article is, you know, you can't use the old philosophy of show up, sit still, shut up, and use that as the foundation for your ministry. So how do you talk to people who create their own reality?
Within the church, we've got a wonderful opportunity to reach a generation that may feel itself abandoned. And it's because we have an ethic that starts out with the fact that God did not abandon us, when in fact he had every reason to do so. Instead of abandoning us, he sent to us his son, Jesus Christ, who would live a perfect life for us, pay the penalty of sin on the cross for us, give us the promise of eternal life through his resurrection from the dead. With that kind of message behind us, it gives us a better view toward what's going to be needed to reach individuals. And what's going to be needed? A great deal of patience and a desire to simply connect and be with. Now, here's a tricky thing, and maybe this would be a good thing for people to think about as we head toward this break. Sometimes when a congregation has a magnificent youth ministry, the youth have their own building, they've got their own rooms, they've got their own director, they've got their own pastor who's caring just for the youth, that while it may make the congregation feel as if they're supplying good ministry, it may in fact be understood by the young people as just another way in which the rest of the adults are trying to get rid of us. They don't have to talk to us. They don't have to communicate with us or be with us. They don't want to be with us. Instead, they've got their surrogates who they have in place to take care of us.
So you're back to the architecture of the home. We've put them on the other side of the church.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's remarkable, because I can see how someone who is a youth director, who is working at the direction of their congregation and the leaders of that church, are putting together programs, and they're going through life thinking that this is something wonderful they're doing for the kids, and we've got all kinds of programs. But in reality, that's not really what the kids want.
What the kids may want is just attention. They may want somebody's ear. They might want a relationship, a genuine, real relationship with a caring adult. And other research has pointed this out, that one of the most significant things that can happen for a teen, particularly within the church, is for there to be another adult other than their parents who befriends them and who offers them some guidance.
Does that have to be someone their own age?
No, not at all. We're talking here about another adult.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the age of their parents, perhaps a grandparent age, somebody who pays attention to them. Now, the way that Clark describes this is when the teens are living in the world beneath, somebody sits on the steps besides the world beneath.
Okay, we will pick that up.
There.
We will pick that up, sitting on the step, waiting for the other half of the program to come back after these few announcements. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, Lawn Gospel. We'll be right back.
Sign on at 7 Tuesday morning. Wake up with inspiration, information, and compelling Christian conversation on the morning show on Worldwide AM 850 KFUO. I'm Paul Clayton, and along with Diane Summers, we'll be talking with our friend Ruth Cook in Denver. Ruth will share some words of encouragement for you on a Tuesday morning. Pastor John Schmidtke will share a devotional, and we'll hear fresh commentary from Dr. Dale Meyer. That's on the morning show Tuesday on AM 850 KFUO. You listen, you learn, you like what you hear. Are you ready to support the broadcast ministry of Worldwide KFUO? If so, visit our website at kfuo.org. Click the Give Now button. It's quick, easy, safe, and secure. Fill out the form. We'll do the rest. It's quick, easy, safe, and secure. Click Give Now at kfuo.org.
I'm Dr. Bill Meyer with the James Dobson Family Minute. The popular culture may deny it, but men gain a great deal of satisfaction from providing for their families. My colleague Dr. Dobson explains.
I have said many times that one of the greatest joys in marriage for me is the awareness that I took care of Shirley, that she was my responsibility, and I would have done anything that she really needed, you know. And the fact that I have earned a living for her and looked out for her welfare, if anybody took that away from me by giving me so much that I didn't have to provide for it, it would have robbed me of something precious.
Men have a built-in need to provide, and they gain a great deal of dignity and self-respect by doing so. For more insight on the very real differences between the genders, visit our website at family.org. That's family.org.
We know that most of you listen to Issues Etc. during your commute home from work. We also realize that since you're still at work, you can't listen to the beginning of Issues Etc. Well, I have some good news for you. AM 850 KFUO rebroadcasts one of the earlier hours of Issues Etc. weekday evenings at 7. So instead of watching primetime TV, tune in to Issues Etc. again tonight at 7 right here on AM 850 KFUO.
For those people dealing with the effects of multiple sclerosis, here's some helpful information. The National Multiple Sclerosis Society Gateway Chapter will provide individuals with MS and their families free 30-minute legal consultations. Professionals will be on hand to provide information on legal, tax, and financial planning. The program will be held on Saturday, September 29th, but the deadline to register is September 7th. To make an appointment, call 314-781-9020. 314-781-9020. Remembering the rich history of the Christian Church, it is the year of our Lord, 962. A German king, Otto I, responds to a plea from Pope John XII. The 10th century had been a chronicle of war and political intrigue in Middle Europe. Otto had succeeded his father, Henry I, in 936. During the next 25 years, he prevailed in political and military skirmishes with other European kings, members of his own family, and outside invaders known as the Magyars. In 951, Otto invaded Italy and defeated King Berengar II. He continued to expand his prominence until 961, when Berengar resumed his aggression against Rome. Answering an appeal from Pope John XII, Otto crossed the Alps and defeated Berengar a second time. The Pope, in turn, bestowed upon Otto the title of Emperor. Thus, Otto was regarded as the founder of the Holy Roman Empire, an empire that lasted until 1806. Otto's coronation took place in 962, in the year of our Lord.
Welcome back. This is Law and Gospel. I'm Roland Lettner, sitting in for Tom Baker. Talking with Dr. John Oberdeck from Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, about an article he did for The Witness called Reclaiming the Church as Young in a Culture of Change. As we went into the break, Dr. Oberdeck, you had us sitting on the steps. So go ahead and take over from there.
Okay. We're sitting on the steps because we're waiting to build trust with the young people, so that they begin to be willing to communicate with us. A couple things that I want to clarify. You know, I had painted this picture of a congregation doing a marvelous youth ministry, and yet it was being perceived as something that was actually distancing the adults from the youth.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly don't want to give the impression that congregations should not have youth directors or DCEs. That's not the intention at all. In fact, I teach at Concordia University, Wisconsin, here in Mequon. I teach the youth ministry classes where we're preparing young people to serve in just those capacities. But here's the key to understanding it. The role of the youth director is not to take the place of the parents. The role of the youth director is to assist the parents in their God-given role of caring for their young people in a God-pleasing way. Because youth ministry is always family ministry. The young people whom the youth director works with, they're coming from families that have their own histories, their own issues, their own blessings. And those all have to be taken into consideration. And for that reason, youth ministry really is family ministry.
So when we take our churches and we try and make them look more like the world, and in that I mean we play music that's more up-tempo with bass and drums and things, and we try and be relevant, and it always seems sort of put on because we're trying to do something to retain our youth, we're going off in the wrong direction, if I hear what you're saying. It's not really about making the church seem more like the world that they're comfortable in, but is it sticking with good old-fashioned, to use the phrase of the program, law and gospel theology, telling the parents what their obligations are, bringing them to understand where they've failed, doing the restoration through the confession, absolution, and then God's given you another day through his grace, here's how
we
do it better?
What you're describing there is where the hope comes from.
Right.
And where the certainty comes from that, for one thing, there's forgiveness of sins. And secondly, in Jesus Christ, we are new creations. And we can also be new people and new families as well with that forgiveness that, that God gives. What to do with more contemporary approaches, boy, that's something that deserves a lot more study.
Mm.
Dr. Marvin Bergman at Concordia University, Nebraska, completed a massive study of confirmands, high school students, parents, and confirmation instructors. Just completed that within the last year. And some of his questions got into that subject. And there it was amazing to find that among the youth themselves, it was pretty well evenly divided. About 25% who were very much wanting contemporary, about 25% who wanted traditional, and about 50% that really could go either way.
Because, you know, I think from what I have heard when these discussions have been had at my congregation, that the assumption is made that we're too old, we're too stuffy, we're too dusty, and that's why the youth isn't interested in church, and that's what's driving them away. It's really greater issues than that.
Yeah, I would say it's because if we're going to look at worship style, what's important there is that what is done well, and is done with fervency, whether we're talking about contemporary or traditional. This discussion is centering much more on relationships and building relationships and sustaining those relationships in the church. Another thing that I think needs to be pointed out, because many of the listeners may be saying, well, look, teenage years have always been tumultuous times, and teenagers tend to, what would we say, they, from an adult perspective, nothing's ever right anyway. So, what? I mean, isn't this just running around that same thing once again? What makes this any different than descriptions of adolescence that would have come back in the 60s, or in the 40s for that matter?
I'll confess to you that is exactly what I felt.
Yeah, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, and so a case has to be built that there actually is something different that's going on here. Well, take this as an example of what's going on that makes it different. The whole condition, or the whole stage of life that we call adolescence, is something that really has developed as something that we observe over about the last 125 years. Prior to that time, when a child reached age 14, 15 or so, only about 10% of them would go on to further education. The others would find themselves doing some kind of adult thing. What I'm saying is that the period between childhood and adulthood, that gap was very narrow. There wasn't a whole lot of time. Sociologists like to say that adolescence begins in biology. That is, you become an adolescent once your body matures to the point where you have hit puberty. That's where adolescence is happening. But adolescence ends in culture. It ends when the culture of which you are a part declares you to be an adult. So we've got a physiological start, but a sociological endpoint for adolescence. And if you, again, you go back to the 1880s, very narrow gap between childhood and adulthood. Now, what do we have today? We've got an enormous gap between childhood and adulthood. And the gap is actually growing bigger physiologically. There is a phenomenon called the secular trend that has been observed over the last 20 to 25 years, where young girls are reaching puberty at an earlier and earlier age.
You know, as the father of a 10-year-old, I'm finding things in the wash I don't want to find right now.
Well,
I'd rather leave those things alone.
This is a scary thought when you think about it.
You're telling me, brother.
Because now, whether it's due to diet I know the Discovery Channel had a program about this, and they were saying that it's actually the fat content in the food, which has increased over the last 30 years or so, that's creating this physiological change so that females are maturing earlier. But if we say adolescence begins when you hit puberty, and it used to be age 13, and now it's age 11, right there we've added two more years to the adolescent time period. And if adolescence ends with the society declaring you to be an adult, and let's say that's not just voting age, that's not just the age at which you can buy liquor, it's when people actually consider you to be in control of your life and you're the one who's doing things. That generally is going to happen for many people when they complete their education. When do people complete their education today? High school, for many people, isn't enough. Tack on 4 years of college. So now we're up to age 22, and you're still an adolescent. For many people, they're not on their own. They're not supplying their needs even at that point, because there's grad school to follow and tack on another 3 years. It's possible that a person could technically fall into this adolescent period until they're 25, 26, or 27.
Wow.
Now we're talking about, rather than a year or a year and a half as the period of adolescence, which may have been the situation years ago, now we're talking about a decade or more. That creates a whole new milieu in which the young person lives, and traversing from childhood to adulthood becomes more difficult.
Well, anything that you look at in life, any type of a journey, is always going to have three points. You're going to have the starting point, you're going to have where you are now, and then you're going to have where you end up at some point in the future. If we continue on the trends that we have right now, I think parents are looking at sort of a dark future here. Or is there any hope for them? What do you see as you look out, say, 10 to 20 years from now, the way things have been going, where will we be?
That's interesting. I've never considered prophecy to be one of my gifts. So. analysis, maybe, but prophecy.
You've been at the university for a while. Uh-huh. You've been an educator for a while, so you've seen generations of students come and go. So maybe using them as a basis for making some type of a prediction.
You see, this is where, again, I think I mentioned earlier that the students that I see here tend to be very well organized, tend to be very upbeat,
mm-hmm.
but they tend to also be coming from some of the more well put together households. And I may not be working with what you'd call a random sampling of young people today.
Well, you're also a pastor, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So in terms of law and gospel, in terms of looking at this, today there's a phrase that's also kicked around a lot that people don't always back up with any kind of substance, and that is, this is a form of judgment for what we've done. Is it unfair to say that the way our kids are turning out today is a form of judgment? Is in a sense, God taking our children away from us for being poor stewards of them?
Well, let me think about that for a while.
We've got about 15 minutes.
Okay, so I can't think for very long.
No, this is going to be on your feet. This is guerrilla theology here. This is not, high scholarly work.
First of all, I think it's unfair and would be a misuse of law and gospel for a listener to hear this discussion and say, oh, I am a bad parent. Because what we're talking about are wide society pervasive attitudes and behaviors and practices that are reflected in the media, in education, and in a variety of different places. Now, what that's reflective of is the fact that we are living in a fallen world. And a fallen world is a sinful world. And to that extent, we may find ourselves suffering as a result of the sin that exists in the world. This may not be sin that is our own fault. This is simply the effects of living in a fallen, sinful world. Within that fallen, sinful world, it seems like we've created an environment in which many young people, not all, but many young people, feel themselves abandoned. And they have no mentor, no good connection to the adult world to help them guide or be guided into the adult world and to mature. Now, in situations where we can be of service and we find ourselves in the presence of young people where we can be the one who greets, the one who says hello, the one who begins to build a relationship, that provides us with an opportunity to serve. And what I would say is that we need to make use of those opportunities whenever we can. Now, that may be within our own household, as we pass our own children in the hallways and in the kitchen, at the kitchen table. It may be at the congregation level. But those are the opportunities that we are given, and those we need to make use of. If we don't make use of it, now we can be talking about, I suppose we'd say sin in a more personal situation. If there's good to be done that I could do, and I fail to do it, I recognize that that is what we would call a sin of omission. And now, rather than simply being the result of a societal situation, I'm now responsible personally for what's happening. Does that make sense to you, Roland?
It does make sense to me. Perhaps it doesn't make sense to one of the listeners. I'll invite them to call in and explore this further. We are in the studio today, live, 505-7850, 505-7850 here in the St. Louis metro area. Or if you're listening anywhere else in the continental United States, 1-800-730-2727. You make the statement in here, adults who care can help the culture. That's where I see sort of a failing here, is that the magic bullet is, how do you get people to care? How do you get them engaged when they're already so active and so distracted that their children are at risk? What do you teach the students in your classes about family ministry or lay ministry, how to overcome that?
Sometimes it just takes asking some very basic questions. How do families prioritize? We do prioritize whether we're aware of it or not, and what I suspect is that oftentimes we're simply not aware of how we judge what's going to be important or what's not going to be important in our households. So some of the first questions and ways to begin is simply to start asking those questions. What's important in terms of our use of time? What's important in terms of our use of resources? And throw everything that's going on into the mix. How much time do I spend at my job? How much time do I have to spend at my job? What's taking place in terms of meal time? How many extracurricular activities are needed for my young person? Compared to what would be most helpful for the young person. There needs to be some analysis of just how we are using what God has presented for us. And that's a place to start.
Well, I mean, a parent doesn't have to wait until their child's not coming home till late at night, or they refuse to communicate with them, or there are other issues that present themselves in the family, whether it's a substance issue or whatever. They need to do this now, right?
Well, it starts very early. Yeah. The communication styles that take place within a household, the disciplinary styles, that's something that starts very, very early. It may be difficult by the time the young person's in the teen years to make some radical changes in how that's done. That could be very difficult. I like to think about it the way that James Dobson did back when he, in the 1980s, put together his Preparing for Adolescence series. He likened it to coaching, that when a parent is working with the child in those early elementary school years, what's happening is coaching. The habits, the behaviors, the repetitive things that happen that establish the lifestyle, that's the coaching that's taking place. And then when the child hits puberty, that's when the game starts. And when the game starts, there's not a whole lot of coaching that's left to be done because the game's happening too rapidly.
As you're talking about this, I'm thinking back to history class I had years ago, and I see a lot of parallels with how a first century Christian church was having to deal with the youth of that time and what we've done today. There were just as many distractions. In the Roman times, I was led to understand that for the most part, if you got tired of having kids, you simply put them out on the street. You had no responsibility for them, and you went about your business. And it was the Christian church that was the first to take those children and reclaim them before they fell into a life of prostitution or a life of, you know, thievery or whatever they may have come to at that time, let alone just dying in the street from lack of food. We're almost back to where we began, aren't we?
In terms of the culture being supportive of many of our Christian values, we are returning very much to those early times, which presents Christians with a very interesting opportunity, and that is to be able to witness in a way as witness had been done in the early centuries, where it was actually noticeable that the Christian was behaving in a way different than those who were around him or her.
In talking about behaving differently, my 15-year-old comes home tonight, and we haven't talked about this before. Can you give some words of encouragement to build up an initiative in that person to get them to talk to that kid the first time maybe today? Because the hardest part is where to start. And like you said at the beginning of your article, you never start by saying, well, when I was your age, well, give me a substitute for that if you have one.
Okay. How is your day today?
It's that simple.
And no, it's not, because the next step is the real tricky part, and that is being quiet and not immediately responding. Now, for many, it's going to be difficult because the young person is saying, it's okay, and start walking away. I want to know, how was your day today? And then through eye contact, through body posture, through everything else that you've got available to you, you focus your attention on that young person. And you're communicating to him at that point, I really do care, and I want to know what's happening with you in your life. Now, it may happen, depending on the relationship, that a person could go through that routine for quite a number of days or weeks before you get a response. But the thing is that the adult in that circumstance is showing himself or herself open to the conversation. And it's the being quiet and listening that's really important. Because as soon as you respond and say, oh, you should have done this instead of that, or who are you really hanging around with? When you start casting doubt upon what's happening in their life, then the distancing starts happening again. Now, I'm not saying that means that parents don't discipline, don't offer guidance, but you've got to have an open dialogue there. That you have to have the listening ear.
So you're really talking about starting out almost on a point of gospel.
Explain why you say that, Roland.
Well, I say that because if you're dealing with somebody who's already hurt and broken, and has maybe been very good at concealing that, you don't want to start by saying, like you said, well, you're hanging out with the wrong types, you're coming home too late, you're really not keeping the grades up like you should. You have to come with a softer heart. It's the bruised reed that will not be broken. If you want to, I guess that's the perspective I'm coming from.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I would agree very much. Uh-huh. And the gospel at that point, because you're not articulating a complete theological statement, is simply your openness to listen and let them speak.
Well, that's sort of how God works with us.
There's a youth organization there in St. Louis that is called Teens Encounter Christ. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
I have heard the name, yes.
Okay, they have a website, ShowMeLutheranTech is the website. Three or four times during the year, they'll have a Teens Encounter Christ weekend. And when I was living there in St. Louis, I was on the faculty at the seminary for 13 years. I was very involved with Tech. Tech offers a fantastic opportunity for the teens to find a place to hear the word of the gospel, because part of what Teens Encounter Christ does is teach confession and absolution. It was just amazing to me to be spending a weekend with 35 to 40 teens and discover how many of them had never heard for themselves in their own heart that they were forgiven. The teenage years, again, are a time when people can build up all kinds of doubts about themselves. There's many things they don't like about themselves. They don't look right. They don't dress right. They don't have enough money. They got the wrong friends. Their own behaviors they don't like. And they don't know where to go with that. And Teens Encounter Christ is a way of helping teens. It teaches them confession and absolution so that they can hear those words, that they are also personally forgiven.
Since you bring that up, I want to make mention that we took a quick look as we were talking at the website for the group, and Show Me Lutheran's Teens Encounter Christ weekend is coming up here on September 1st through September 3rd, and it's going to be at Salem Lutheran Church at 8343 Gravois Road in Afton.
Oh, are you on top of things?
No, that's the guy with the board here, Gary, the professional engineer, is the one that pulled it up real quick. I'm just the guy with the microphone and having a lot of fun doing it. The phone number that's given here, it says, for information, it's 636, but I know that's not an Afton phone number. I would say if you want more information about the event, call Salem Lutheran Church, 8343 Gravois Road in Afton. They're probably available in the book. I know they have a website that you can go to online and get more information. I will give this phone number, but if it turns out to be wrong, it's something we just pulled up quickly, 636-391-0859.
And let me also let people know that adults can also attend the Teens Encounter Christ weekend as adult observers. That's actually how I became very involved with it, was by participating in a weekend, because actually it was my teenage son who had been on one and said, "Dad, you got to do this." "Oh, I'll get around to it." "Yo, you got to do this." And he convinced me to participate in it.
Dr. Oberdeck, I want to thank you. The hour went by very quickly. A lot
we're
of
done.
Good information. We're pretty close to done. When you hear the music come up, we will be. There it is. Okay. Dr. John Oberdeck, Concordia University, Mequon. Thank you very much for your time today. This is Law and Gospel. I'm Roland Lettner, filling in for Tom Baker. We'll be right back.
Listen to Law and Gospel with Tom Baker, Monday through Friday at 1:05 p.m. on AM 850 KFUO. You can write Pastor Tom at AM 850 KFUO, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or at this email address, lawgospel@lawgospel.com.